Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127games.com.
Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 110, Mythwits Podcast. So today, I am delighted to say that we are once again joined by a guest. He's been here on the show before. And before I introduce him, I just want to let all the listeners know that the podcast we're going to be talking about, The Mythwits, is a great podcast. However, it's not safe for work. It's not family friendly, but this episode, like all of Wargaming Recon's episodes, are both safe for work and family friendly. So don't worry, there's not going to be any content in this episode that you don't want your little ones to hear. But if you decide to go and watch and listen to Mythwits, and I suggest you do, you might want to make sure you have some earbuds in or that you kick the kids out of the room. So without further ado, I want to go ahead and welcome our guest, the one and only Mr. Peter Blix Bryant. How are you?
Hey, I'm excellent. It's good to be on the show again.
Your episode, when you talked about Rogue Chess, which I know we're going to talk about a little bit later in the episode, but right. Your Kickstarter project, your first Kickstarter project, your episode on here talking about that was one of the top 10 episodes for 2013. So a big round of applause to you.
Yay. Hey, then do I get to credit you a little bit for my successful Kickstart?
I think it's all you, but if you want to send some credit my way, I'm not going to say no.
Well, if I had a bunch of listeners come, you know, they heard about the game on your show, I'm willing to bet at least some of them helped back it. So thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Well, let's talk about the Mythwits, because that's why you're here.
Yep.
What is it?
Okay, so the Mythwits is it's what the con men became. So I think the last time I was on here, I might have mentioned the con men, or you know, anybody who travels in our circles probably has heard me, you know, talk about it because I was a big promo on that. So what happened was we started the con men about 2 years ago, maybe 2.5 years ago. It was doing all kinds of stuff, going to cons and promoting my stuff, going to cons and promoting. So the podcast, Tri-Tac podcast that I do, and you know, all my gaming stuff that I work on, and just so I found myself at cons a lot. I thought, well, heck, you know, I go to these cons and I cover stuff while I'm there. I try to do like a Tri-Tac episode, and then I steal the show from the other co-hosts. You know, so I would what I do call hijacking the show. So I go to a con, I do a live episode there. And then that would just be an episode. That week's episode would be my episode. And I was like, well, I'm doing these cons all the time. Why don't I do a show about going to cons? Because at the time, there, you know, I looked and I didn't see any. Now it turns out there were a couple, and there are some gaming podcasts that will touch on cons. But I was like, you know, there isn't just a con podcast, you know, just about going to cons. I got crafty and came up with this name, The Con Men. And I got together with a couple other guys and said, hey, you know, let's all do this together because I can't cover all these cons myself. Anyone can be a con man. Anyone who goes to a con wants to report and can be a con man. So anyway, flash forward 2.5 years later, we come back from Dragon Con. I have all these like really like crazy ideas. I was like, oh man, I want to do more video. And this guy, Adrian, one of the con men, he says to me, dude, check this link out. So I go to this link and it's a video show called The Con Men. I was like, oh, okay. I started looking into it, and they started right around the same time we did, except they were all video and we were all audio. And I was like, oh, that's going to be confusing for some people, you know. But while I was at Dragon Con, I ran into a guy who called himself The Con Man, a guy who goes to cons and covers them. And then I found two more sites that had popped up called The Con Men. They were Con Men podcasts, different variations. Like one was The Con Men, another one was Con... I don't know, something con men, something. Anyway, so I was like, all right, guys, we gotta figure out what we're going to do because we either are going to try and differentiate ourselves somehow or you know, I don't know. I don't want to fight with these guys, and I don't want people getting confused, and I don't want to go to cons and, like, you know, there being two or three different con men at the con. Like, you know, it could happen. So we got to talking, and we were like, all right, look, that's it. Let's just redo it. Let's wipe the slate clean, and we will reinvent ourselves. Because we are crafty people and we can do that.
Because we were going to go to video, and we decided we're going to go all video, all live. Now we do have an audio version, but that's torn out of that's stripped out of the video. So it's really a video show. You can listen to the audio. I think you miss stuff. We try to make sure that you're still entertained. Like if we do something very visual, we'll try to describe it, but we don't always do the best job of that. So, and there's just some things you can't, it's not funny unless you see it. So we also decided that we were going to expand it. We're still very heavily involved in doing the con thing, covering cons, interviewing people from cons, that whole deal, just like the con men, except now we cover anything that's geek related. So any kind of geek news, geek subjects, and we have a guest on every week. So we have some guests from industry, on every week so that we can, the idea behind that is that way every show is kind of unique in its own way. The dynamic changes when you have somebody else on. So you got there's four of us, there's four hosts, and then a guest. And it totally changes the show every time you have a guest on. So that's been working out, and that's what the MythWits is. Skits. Sometimes we have our buddy Jay Libby do a video for us, and he'll do some crazy off the wall. We call it Jay's One Take Theater. He'll do some video, and I just recruited a guy, Steve, a friend of mine. He's gonna start doing game reviews. So a little 2-3 minute spot on a game, you know, whatever game he picks, I'm good with. You know, like I think, you know, maybe D&D Next might be a good review for him to do soon, because I think he's been playtesting. He's one of the beta testers, so that would be good. And then we do
interviews and stuff at cons. So we just put up the one for Tim Kask. So there's like an hour and a half long interview I do with me and Tim, just shooting a breeze. It was awesome.
And then I have one coming up. Interviewed two cosplayers. The one cosplayer, she used to go by the Chainmail Chick, and now she is Allegra Lena or something like that. But that episode will go up pretty soon. I interviewed a guy who worked. He did some CG graphics for the movie Project London. You remember that movie with Jen Page and all? So he was one of the guys that several years ago got together. He was one of the CG artists that helped put all that CG stuff together. And he was at Gen Con promoting it with Jen Page and the director. I knew him because I worked with him. So he worked at the Army base with me as one of our graphics guys. And he just recently moved out to California because he was tired of doing the Army thing. He wanted to go full bore into movies and stuff. So he was going to be at Gen Con, and he posted on his page, you know, hey, I'm going to be at Gen Con. Anyone else going? I was like, dude, I'm going. Let's meet up. Let's have a couple beers. Like, what are you going for? And he told me, and I was like, oh, I didn't know all that because we never talked about that at work. I had no idea he had this secret life. And so I said, I would love to interview you. And he didn't know I had this secret life. So he was like, sure. So I interviewed him. That was a good interview. And I don't know. I got a bunch more. We're digging through them as fast as we can. It's a lot of work doing a video show.
Well, of course, I know how difficult it is doing audio, but the plus of audio is that, you know, if we mess up or whatever, you just kind of trim things in whatever audio program that you're using to edit things. But with video, you get it matched up off, or you got to just say, forget it and just keep on going and hope for the best. So you have to like train yourself, don't you?
Yeah, and that's we've been trying to do it so that there's no edit necessary at all. And if there is an edit necessary, it's too bad because we're not editing the show. I told the guys, I was like, look, editing, I absolutely hate doing it. It's boring. Editing takes forever. I mean, you know, you record an episode. If you record an hour-long episode, the audio editing is what, about 3 hours?
Yep, easy.
Yeah, and that's not even a really super heavy edit. That's a pretty decent edit. And I do that for the TriTac podcast, or I used to. Bruce does most of that now. I do help him out from time to time so that I don't stick him with every edit. Yeah, I told the guys, I was like, I don't want to edit. That was all kind of part of the live video thing. It forces us to be better at our game, or deal with the consequences of needing an edit, you know? So what we do is we take that time, spend maybe 2-3 hours a week preparing, for a show, sometimes less, but, you know, I'll spend some time preparing for, you know, recruiting guests, you know, giving them all the information, posting the invite and doing all that kind of stuff.
But that's all stuff I don't really mind doing. You know, it's promo stuff. I'm pretty good at that. And there are four hosts, so everybody has a job. So it's great. So Adrian does the web page, so I don't have to do any web modifications. I contact Adrian, hey, fix this on the web page. Mike does the game portion of the show, so he puts together all the games, and he edits a lot of the videos. So a lot of the video that gets edited is edited by him. Brian does the news, so I don't have to do any research on the news. So we have all this content coming in because four people are working on it kind of vigorously. And then when the show is done, sometimes I'll do a light edit on it, like,
Monday night's show had a little bit of a glitch in the beginning, and I wanted to chop that beginning piece off. So I had to pull it into Premiere, and I did cut that off. But I mean, that's like a really light edit. I just pull it in, cut off the front piece, and export it out. And at the same time, while I'm doing that, I export out the audio. And then I upload that to the site, and it's all done.
That's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
And then Mike does the show notes too. Now, I control the board, so, like, when we're doing our live video, I actually switch views for people, switch screens. I have different profiles set up because I use a capture software. So we use Google Plus like we're doing now, but I have a capture software, and what it does, I tell it what regions to pick. So right now you're on my big screen, right?
Yep.
This would be a region on my big screen, which then goes over onto the big screen that you see in the MythWits layout. And then all the little squares down at the bottom, I actually mapped each one of the little squares from Google Plus to match up with those. And then I also pull images in for my guests. So, for example, Andre was on last night, and you know, I made sure I pulled up his logo so that when he's talking, his logo is displayed the whole time. And then when he starts talking about his products, I switch those images so that the watcher will see all of his images of the products that we're talking about. Now, it's a little weird because none of those guys can see it. It's all on my end, you know. Even the intro, when the intro runs, I tell the guys, look, just be quiet while the intro runs. I want to kick Mike in his butt because almost every single time I say, all right, I'm starting the stream now, he goes, 1, 2, 3, go. I'm like, God! He sticks it right on the front. I'm going to get him one of these days. I always forget because, you know, I'm like, dude, just be quiet. I'm going to say, all right, I'm going to hit start now. And, like, he will literally wait, like, a second or two and then start talking. And I'm like, and I know he does it on purpose. So next time I'm just going to say, all right, I'm starting now, and I'm going to wait. And then after he finishes talking, I'm going to hit it. And then I'll let him know afterwards, got you this time. But, yeah, he likes to do that to me. I think he does it on purpose.
Well, what listeners to Wargaming Recon may not know is whenever I have a guest on, we actually did a shorter version of it for this recording, but usually we get on and we talk for about 5, maybe 10 minutes beforehand, just kind of see what's going on, and then I'll be like, okay, now don't say anything, we're going to have that pause, and then I'm going to start the recording for real, and then we'll go, because that way, as you know, silence is much easier to edit out than not silence.
Yeah, imagine if you're like, okay, all right, I'm gonna do the intro and I'll be ready to go in just a second, right? And then the second you start talking, I start talking. That's what Mike does to me.
Yep.
For the intro, and I'm really pissed. If you listen, okay, so I'll give you guys a little behind the scenes thing here. So if you listen to the latest episode, the one with Andre Krupa, it's episode 10. You'll hear as the episode starts, you'll hear real quietly, 1, 2, 3, go, like in the background, right? And then you're going to hear this. You're going to hear this. Because I'm so mad that he did that. I actually broke my pen. The top flew off. And I was just, I was so mad. Oh, man. But it's fun. I mean, that's the fun part of doing a live show. I mean, you know, we have technical issues and it's frustrating and stuff. But, you know, if you don't want that, you don't do a live show. You know, if you don't want to chance that. So, We always have something go wrong, but that's cool. I mean, it's kind of like when you hear about like the old Lucy show or any of the old live TV shows and stuff, all the problems they had, and it was funny, you know. At the end of the day, you know, that's why people watched it, because that's why people like live TV, because they're just waiting for that screw up, you know, and it's funny.
Well, I guess the best way to put it into kind of perspective for like a gamer or a tabletop gamer is it's someone coming up to the table and starting to play with the stuff before all your shit's on before all your stuff's on the table.
Right.
And they're like, let me move this, let me do that. And you're like, let me get your set up already.
Right.
And they're just kind of going. And the difference is that's an easy enough fix, because you can say, hey, back off. On video, you're stuck really, unless you want to spend all that time editing And then for audio, you can just be like, okay, let's try that again. And then it sounds hopefully decent to everyone afterwards.
Yep. And you could just clip it out. I mean, usually you can get around that. I've gotten really good at that with my audio stuff. Matter of fact, for Tritech, we use Skype, and we have this thing called the Skype iFree Skype Recorder. And what it does is it records your side and the other side on different tracks. So left side is one person, everybody else is the right. So what's good about that is we all record our own side. So our show sounds as good as it possibly can, because the only track you're going to use is your side that you recorded on your computer. So you don't have to worry about any kind of crappy connection or any dropouts or anything like that from the other person, because they're recording from their side. So then we pull that into Audacity and you line all the tracks up, and then you go through, and if there's an edit and you have to cut something out, you have to make sure you cut out all four tracks once you get them lined up. And that gets a little tricky sometimes, and it's really funny when you cut something out and you can't get the thing to line up anymore, and you're like, what did I do? And you can't go back because you're not really sure where you cut. You're not sure where you messed it up, because it's going along, and then all of a sudden, the person that used to be lined up starts talking. You're like, you're not supposed to be talking yet. Why is he? Oh man, his whole track is messed up. And then you kind of have to figure out, how much space do I need to put in there? And then there's the whole, like, sometimes, you know, you're recording at a certain bit rate, and for whatever reason, someone's computer is off just a tiny bit, and their setting is right. It's just the way their computer compressed the file, and their file will be a little shorter for whatever computer, for cocked a reason that is, you know, the computer fates that do not smile upon you. Someone's track will be too long or too short, and then you got to kind of go in there and put spaces in. But anyway, we're getting way in the weeds on the technical stuff.
Well, I think it's good, though, because it tells listeners about the high-quality production values that you put into your stuff, whereas anyone who's ever listened to, even if it's someone's first time listening to Wargaming Recon, but anyone who's ever listened to more than one show knows that I do a very light approach to all that, because I want it to feel like you guys and girls, there's probably some women listening as well, that all of you are like here with me, as if it was the same, you walk right up to me and we're having a conversation. Now, if I was to do all this extra editing and stuff, and I could, I would drive myself crazy, and I probably would want to stop doing the show eventually, but I could do that, but it wouldn't sound the way it would sound if you came up to me in person. For example, there's one of the listeners, Patrick, he goes to TotalCon, and he listened to the show. He came up to me, I guess it was in TotalCon 2013, and he was like, you know, you sound like you do on the show. And, of course, I could myself sound much, much better. It wouldn't be the same. It would almost be too polished for me.
Right. Yeah.
But clearly, I mean, it was more of like a hobby podcast kind of thing, not some sort of big professional whatever thing, which right. someone could do. But anyone who would be watching MythWits or listening to the audio after would get a more polished sound compared to what you're sounding like here on Wargaming Recon.
Well, I don't know. Like I said, we don't edit, so it sounds like it sounds. So you're in the room with us, and I haven't had any complaints yet. People, it's been all positive so far, which kind of worries me. I mean, like, is it just my friends watching it and they're all being nice, or you know, because I'm up for like some honest criticism. So if you're listening to this episode and you decide, hey, I'm gonna check this MythWits thing out, and you go watch our show, you know. Criticism is fine by me. Please do. If there's anything, you know, you don't like about the show or you think could be better, I'm always open for it, because I haven't really gotten anything I would consider really critical. Now, that, like I said, that's one of two things. Either people are being nice, or B, I don't know, maybe we are that good. Who knows? I find that hard to believe, though. But maybe. Or maybe people just aren't critical because they know it's a web show, you know, by guys who are not getting paid a cent to do it.
Well, and I think a lot of people are understanding of that. They're not going to put up with something that's a piece of garbage, but mm-hmm. I think people know that we all have a day job, presumably, or school or something, and that this is being done in the spare time. So they want it to be worth their time, because right. everyone's time is valuable, but I think that threshold of tolerance is maybe set to a more understanding place than it would be if it was, I'm addicted to the podcast, the stuff you missed in history class by the Discovery Channel.
Okay, right.
And so they have a whole thing that's tied into their website, howstuffworks.com. A big company like that, I expect a much higher of everything. So right. when I hear the host going or ah, or they have their, what's worse, the bad editing where there was one episode and there was 30 seconds of silence at the end after they did their credits, but not all their credits. And then they had to do their last sponsor. So I'm just sitting there and waiting and waiting and waiting. And then it comes in. I expect better for something like that. But if it was like you or me or anyone else who's just doing it in their spare time, I'd be much more forgiving of that. Why don't we talk about one of your episodes in particular? It's one I've seen a few of your episodes, not as many, mainly because I agree with you that it's much better to watch them, especially if you can watch them live as opposed to after the fact. And you release... It's every Monday night, right?
Yes, every Monday night at 9:30 Eastern Standard Time is when it starts.
So that ends up being a rough time of the week for me for you know, various reasons.
Right.
But so I try to watch them when I can, whether it's live or afterwards. But there's one episode in particular that just really struck me, and I think it's one that listeners to hear will really enjoy. It's the episode that you focused on your experience, you, Mike and you, at TotalCon, and the episode right before this, episode 109, was our TotalCon extravaganza. And I mean, we've had people talk about it before. In your previous appearance here on the show, you talked about TotalCon a little bit. So I think listeners would really enjoy that episode as like the introduction to MythWits.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's two hosts, you know, on that show. So it was just me and Mike. Normally we have the four, but we weren't going to do a show that week. So, because I was going to be burned out, you know, I'm coming back from a con, spent the whole weekend, ran a bunch of stuff, did a bunch of stuff. And I was like, you know, Monday is going to be, that's going to be tough. I'm going to be tired. I'm not going to really be up for doing a show. I'm not going to have the time to do the prep work that we normally do. So I didn't even line up a guest, nothing. So we had no guest. And the other two guys, Brian and Adrian, they weren't available because they, you know, we weren't having a show, so they had other plans. So Mike started bugging me. He's like, let's do a show. Let's do a show. And I was like, oh, man, I don't know, man. I'm tired. I don't really – he's like, don't be a, you know, kid safe. Earmuffs. So he's like –
You're big wuss, yeah.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, don't be a wuss. He's like, come on, do the show. And I said, all right, fine, we'll do it. So I threw together like really quick news items. I don't even remember. I don't know if we even did a game. Oh, I know we did. We did do a game. But it was one of those online games where you pick different things and it tells you which, I don't know, I think it was which Star Wars character we were. So that was a good episode, and it was all completely off the cuff, and we just talked about our experience, and I've gotten a lot of really good feedback from that. You know, we even apologized. We're like, hey, people, we're not even prepared to do this. We just decided to do it and throw it together, and everybody's like, oh, it was great. You know, we really liked the spontaneity of the show, just the banter of going to the con. Yeah, it turned out to be a good episode.
One of the things I liked about it was when I was at TotalCon, of course, I'm like trying to file away in my head, oh, this is going on, that's going on, when I get back to my room making notes and doing a little bit of recording so I could just kind of memo sort of stuff for when I recorded our coverage of it. But listening and watching you guys talk about it, it reminded me about things that I had seen or even experienced that just because there's so much going on at any type of con that just kind of those things got blocked out of my mind or things that I didn't experience at all. So, for example, at TotalCon, one of the, I would say, largest draws is the Iron GM competition, and you guys had some really good coverage about that.
Yeah, we've seen – now, that was easy. That was sort of a gimme because I've seen the Iron GM contest.
Yes.
I've seen it like I think 4 years in a row now. I help the guy. I loan the guys my equipment, all the audio equipment. They use my audio equipment, so I'm really familiar with what they do. And I the first year I was there and I was doing interviews, I interviewed Roan and Lou. So I've got a really good feel and understanding of the Iron GM contest. So if you want to call it a competition, contest just doesn't sound right. But anyway, so. That was something I knew about,
I could talk about easily, and had to remember. The only thing I had to remember was that Chris won, you know? and that was easy because Chris is one of my game masters in an event that I ran, and I've been working with him. I worked with him for like 3 months before TotalCon to prep for that adventure that we were doing that me and him and Mark and Nick did together. You know, it was kind of natural. It came kind of natural. But yeah, that was really cool that he won. You know, being that I know him and I'm friendly with him, it was like a little bit of me one too, but I won't go so far as Mike and take any credit for his win.
He won because he's a damn fine GM.
The other thing that really struck me about your coverage was something that I had noticed, but it came in one ear and it went out the other until you guys started talking about it, and then I really thought about it, and it was that at TotalCon for the first time, they had a special vendor. It was Quigley Cakes, I believe. Yeah, Quigley's Cakes. They had them at, for anyone who's never been to TotalCon, the con's held in a Holiday Inn, which it doesn't sound as nice as it really is, but it's a nice Holiday Inn. They have beautiful big courtyard in the middle, and then there's a big stage in that part, and then you go on the other side of the courtyard, and they have a big pool, and off to the right of the courtyard is this long hallway where most of the con events are, where they have all the ballrooms and stuff. And in that hallway, right as you go through the double doors on the right, was one of those big 6x4 folding tables. And on that folding table was this bakery, Quigley's Cakes, that came from, I think, Saratoga, New York. I might be wrong about the town, but they were definitely from New York. And they had all these cupcakes and cookies that were kind of like gaming themed, and they like role playing game themed. And they had like arms coming out of them and dragons on them. And they looked really cool. Now, right across from them on the hall was the main bathroom facilities for the entire hotel, the main public ones, the men's room and the ladies. And, of course, as you guys said in the show, sort of gaming event is probably going to have lots and lots and lots and lots of guys at it. And a bathroom after lots and lots and lots of guys is not going to smell so nice.
No, it was like she set those cupcakes up in an outhouse. It was awful. I was like, man, what a bad location for cupcakes. But you know what? I talked to Angelia about that, and she said it didn't hurt her sales one bit. She sold out every day early.
Well, after I saw your show, and I was thinking about it, I was trying to figure out if the spot they were in was good or bad, and I talked to my wife, because my wife, she's not a pro baker or anything, but she bakes and she does cake decorating and all that kind of stuff. It was like, if you were going to go to a convention and this is the layout and stuff, would you be okay with this as a location? And she said that she would, and the reason is that that's the main entry point into most of the gaming, so as people, everyone has to walk by it. So you get that smell factor, which isn't so great, but I tell you, it didn't deter me. I went mainly because, and this might get me into a little bit of trouble with the Troll in the Corner Podcast Network, but Ben Gerber, who's head honcho of the Troll in the Corner Podcast Network, he was a guest of honor like Blix at TotalCon, and I think it was that Friday, he went up to the cupcake people, the cupcake ladies, and he bought a cupcake. The cupcakes were $2.50, and he had a $5 bill, so he bought one cupcake, got the change, and his wife Jen was standing next to him. He did not buy a cupcake for her. He did not ask if she wanted one, and she did. So she's telling me about this later on Friday when we're at the Matthew Ebel concert. And I was like, what, really? And of course, as a guy, I should have stuck up for Ben. But I was like, seriously, I haven't been married as long as Ben has been, but even I know you buy your wife the cupcake. Or you at least say, hey, how about a cupcake? Would you like one?
Sure.
Nothing. So it was this whole running gag. And on Saturday morning, I went and I bought one cupcake for me and one for her. So I go into, they're into, I don't know, one of the panels. Ben's sitting there with his daughter and his wife sitting there. And I just put the cupcake in front of her. And he looks at me like, what the heck are you doing?
Oh, he didn't even know. Oh, that's funny.
But it was great. But like everyone was lining up for these cupcakes, and they had a really great gimmick, which may have helped them. TotalCon obviously is a very board game, card game, role-playing game centric convention, although I think it's branching out more into other types of gaming. But I would say that's its core, really, the core audience. So whenever you would go up and buy, I think it was only for cupcakes, but I'm going to say whenever you would buy anything, they made you roll a D20. And if you got a 20, if you got a crit, you got a free cupcake. If you, I know, right?
That is a good gimmick. That's a good gimmick.
If you rolled, I think it was 16 or 17 and above, you got like 10% off. But if you rolled a 1, I think it was, if you failed beyond absolute belief and you rolled a 1, you had to buy a second cupcake.
That's funny. That's a good gimmick. I like that.
So like they got really into it, and they're like, oh, you're buying a cupcake, roll your dice and see what's going to happen. And people just, I saw a couple people win free cupcakes, and everyone's like, oh, you got a free cupcake. And
So, I mean,
oh, man, there's nothing to attract gamers like free cupcakes, especially with the peanut butter and bacon ones.
Yeah, those were an extra dollar, $3.50 for.
Were they really? I didn't have any of them. I didn't eat any cupcakes. But if I had, because I kept forgetting about it, you know, I'd walk past, go, oh yeah, I should get some cash. And I don't even know if they took credit cards or not. But you know, I was always running around anyway. But if I had gotten one, it would have been one of the ones with bacon on it. That is faux show.
I have to say, like, I'm the last person in the world who really needs a cupcake. But, well, I mean, nobody needs a cupcake, to be sure.
Some people need a cupcake. Come on, man.
But, I mean, it was good. It was tasty. And I could see why people would definitely buy them. And it's good to know that they had that amount of business. I saw your show, and I'm thinking, you know, they get a point. It's right across from the cesspool that is the bathroom.
Right.
And then I thought about it. I was like, does that make me disgusting for buying a cupcake? And like, I'm sitting in front of my MacBook for a good hour just thinking about this kind of stuff because you guys talked about it on your show.
It's like, man. Yep. TotalCon was good. That was a fun time. I'm looking forward to next year.
Bigger and better.
That's bigger and better. Well, I'm going to... Yeah, I'm expanding next year. So normally I just do a thing on Friday night. I take over this area, take over the stage on Friday nights. But I've decided that this year, the big event that I ran this Friday, or the Friday, I am going to do that same kind of thing on Saturday night, and I'm going to do my regular Blixapalooza on Friday night, where I'm going to write a new short story, and I'm going to have my friend's other guests of honor and stuff read parts of that. So it's like a live reading with a full cast, and then I'll do a Cube of Death, and then I will do a live episode of MythWits, and I am going to try and work with a hotel. I got a buddy of mine that works in the audiovisual field for a hotel, not that one, but for a hotel. And I'm going to try and find out from him what it would take to hook into the internet connection, like a live hard line that the hotel people do. Like the same, like not the connection everyone else is sharing on their phones and stuff. Because, you know, at a geek convention, forget about it. Everybody's on their phone and their tablets and their devices, and you can't run anything live. You won't get enough bandwidth to run a live stream. But, and I don't even know if I can do it the way I'm thinking, but if I can, I would like to do a live streamed show from TotalCon. You know, hey, we're live from TotalCon. You know, so that the whole world can be part of the convention. So I thought that might be kind of fun.
That'd be really cool.
Yeah. So you know, with all the live streaming stuff we've been doing, I have the technology and the skills, and well, at least some of the skills of how to do that. You know, I'm sure I'll screw up something. I always do. But Jay Libby always gives me crap because he's always like, you and your tech issues. It's like, yeah, but man, I'm always pushing the boundary. That's what happens when you push the boundary. If you want to be on the cutting edge, you take the risk of running into some issues.
That's true. You're going to have to sign me up for Cube of Death, too.
Okay, you're in. Done.
I actually brought the Cube of Death deck that you gave me at who knows when to TotalCon this year. And I was like, oh, got to get some people together and play, and of course it didn't. It's just there's so much going on. I never get to free game
right.
as it is, but
yeah, me neither. It's always tough.
Like you, plans are in the works for me and my group of gaming buddies to do things bigger and better for TotalCon 2015.
Cool.
We're trying to get the con to agree to let us do a panel and also to run two games. I think we're gonna try to link them together. To tell the history of the founding of America through miniatures wargaming.
Oh, I like that. So I like that.
I have to say, your event from this year kind of inspired me with the whole like linking thing.
Yeah.
So I think we're going to tackle French and Indian War.
Sweet.
And then tackle American Rev and kind of give people a chance to follow what happens in one game and see how it impacts the later event and how that actually impacts the founding of America, as it were.
Sweet. I like that. I like that a lot.
So, I'm hoping it does well, but I mean, you never know.
Hey, I never know either, man. I never expect anything to go the way it should. Like, for example, for my big event that I ran, they had two different times listed for the event. There was a 5 o'clock, which is what it was supposed to be, and then something got confused, and there was like a 7 o'clock listing. And one of my game masters, well, actually two of my game masters, actually all three of them. Now that I'm thinking about it, I think it was all three of them. It's seven, but I managed to intercept two of them. And so Dr. Nick, he was
he was actually on the road, and he's like, oh, it starts at 5? He's like, okay, I think I can make it there by then. So he came in a little early. He got there on time. Chris was already there, and he didn't have anything scheduled, so that wasn't a big deal. He's like, oh, okay, yeah, no problem. We'll start a little early. But Mark Edwards, he had made plans. He had to go home. He lives near the convention, so he had to go home and feed his kids. So he couldn't stay. So the event started almost about an hour and a half late, and his table was about to leave, and I convinced him, I sweet talked him into staying, which was cool because then it all went off okay. But I felt bad for him because, you know, there was a couple of people at the table like, well, we don't really want a game that late, and this is going to push everything back. And I was like, look, I understand. Well, you know, but we worked it out, and it worked out. It was fine. It was good. I learned some lessons from that, though, not to do with the time thing. I mean, that I did learn. I have to check through the thing and make sure that there aren't, you know, any kind of mess ups with the thing. Even though I send it in, I need to check up with it. That's my fault. I should have done that anyway. But the second thing is that I ran it with 4 different systems. So each table had their own system, and then when they all came together, I took all their character sheets and gave them new character sheets for a completely different system. And part of that was ego. I thought it would be kind of cool to brag about the fact that I ran a game that tied all together, but it was 4 different time zones, 4 different genres, 4 different systems. And it's like a bragging right, right? But it would have been better if it was just one system. So anyway, you know, live and learn. And I think James Carpio is going to, he's going to be one of my game masters next year. He's already volunteered.
That's quite an ambitious undertaking. And I think it just says something about how well it did go. That, yeah, there were some ways to improve, but overall it was a good event.
Yeah, well, we prepped for it. I mean, me, Nick, Chris, and Mark actually got online about 3 months before the con and started working on this. And we met once every couple of weeks to flesh out ideas because we didn't know exactly what we were going to do in the beginning. So we had to actually get to that point that's what we were going to do. And so we did that. And I had Andre cut a video. So Andre Krupa, I had him actually cut a video for me. I gave him an outline of a script, not a full script, just an outline. These are things you need to touch on. And he recorded like a video for me. And then I took the video and I edited it and threw in special effects and stuff. And there were 2 tables that got to see that video. At some point during the adventure, the game master said, "And you see this?" And I brought up my laptop and played the video for him. And they thought that was a cool touch. So I'm probably going to do something like that again next year.
Why don't we talk a little bit about your last time appearance here on the show? That was episode 94. Okay. And like I said at the top of this episode, that made it into the top 10 most popular, most downloaded episodes of 2013. At the time that I compiled all those stats, you actually had almost 1,100 people who watched, listened to your appearance on here. But that was dedicated to your debut Kickstarter project for Rogue Chess. So I know when we talked then, I was saying how excited I was about it and I telling all sorts of people that they really need to back your Kickstarter. What's the status of things now? How did things go?
Oh, it failed miserably. No, it went over great. I made roughly about 150% of my goal, which was cool. I finished the product and it's all done. I have not delivered to people yet, but I have everything just about. I mean, I got the king level, the big level was these great big they're really cool. They're these boards that they're like a tree trunk cut across. Now it's actually pieced together, but that's what it looks like. They're nice though. They're really nice. So they got a chessboard cut into them. They got drawers underneath them that you can put the pieces in. So you got your white pieces on one side and your black pieces on the other. And then I had them laser etched with the Rogue Chess logo on one side and their name on the other side. So they came out really, really nice. Better than I thought they were going to look. Now I did have to, and this is, all right, so when you run a Kickstarter, you run into stuff that you never thought, you're like, oh my God, I didn't think this was going to be an issue. So the pieces that they sent, I didn't like the rooks. So the rooks, they look like fat pawns. And if you're looking at the board from the right angle, you almost can't tell the difference between pawns and your rooks. And I was like, I can't do that. I can't have that. I mean, this is for a game where you've got cards. So you're not just playing chess. You're playing chess with this other distraction. And now you've got to like be careful which pieces. I was like, that's not going to work. So fortunately, I work at a place where we have a bunch of craftsmen, because we make prototypes for the military. So I went to one of the woodworking guys, and he's a master woodworker. So I asked him if he could fix those for me. So basically what he did is he shaved the top off a little bit, and he put cuts in it to make the battlements, and then drilled the top out a little bit. Because imagine a rook without the battlements on it, a round head.
Yeah, that's not a rook.
Right, it's not a rook, exactly. And I was like, I can't live with this. So he took care of it for me, and he fixed them up, and they look like rooks now. And you know what he charged me? A Frappuccino.
Oh, although I don't think you're allowed to say that because that's copyrighted and trademarked.
Okay.
A frozen cappuccino beverage?
Yes, I'm sorry. That's what that was. I meant that. That's what I meant.
I thought so.
So I bought him a tasty beverage. That's all he wanted. He's a good guy. So I took care of that. The queen boards are in. They're sitting on my shelf over there. The T-shirts, they were supposed to be done by now, but they're going to be done, I think, next week. This crazy weather we've been having, the woman's shop froze over. So she said her water lines were all frozen up. They didn't burst, fortunately, but she said, you know, she needs water, I guess, to make the T-shirts. I don't know, wash the dyes out or whatever it is they do. But she said, I can't make any T-shirts yet.
I shouldn't laugh, but it's funny.
But I want to use her because her price is good. But for two, she's local, and I'm going to use her over and over and over again. So I'm going to have she's going to be my T-shirt lady. So I didn't want to go. Like, I know you get yours from Vistaprint, and I was almost going to go that way. What's that?
Yeah, I do, but only for a short span of time.
Right.
They're insanely expensive unless you get a coupon code or whatever. And they're doing coupons all the time. But even then, they get you with the shipping. The plus side of Vistaprint, which would not work for a Kickstarter project, in my opinion, but it's print on demand. So, like, I can do a shirt at a time or two shirts or whatever.
Sure.
And you pay for that. But I would love to have a T-shirt lady or a T-shirt guy nearby where I can just say, hey, get me whatever, and I need 50 shirts and these sizes or whatever. And what you're doing makes much more sense, especially since it's for a Kickstarter.
Yeah, I got pretty lucky. Mike, he's a scoutmaster, and he has to do T-shirts for the scouts for his troop and all. And so he's already done all the research, and I just piggybacked off his research. And he said she's really good. He likes her. He trusts her, so I trust her. He wouldn't steer me wrong. So it was like $25 per screen to set up. You don't have that with Vistaprint, but I don't think Vistaprint does the silk screening. I think they do, they probably do like a print and press, or I don't know how they do it, but your shirts are full color, and that would cost a fortune if you silk screen that. Because each one of those colors would be a different print.
Mm-hmm.
So they would charge you, it would cost you a bit. So I designed the t-shirts. They're black and white. So one color, all she needs to do is make a screen and put white ink on it. So that saved me quite a bit of money. So I had to buy a couple screens. And then all my T-shirts are $6 a piece.
Oh, that's nothing.
Yeah, you can't beat that, right? So I'm looking forward to getting those. And so anyway, all right. So the T-shirts are going to be done very soon. The big boards are done. The queen board's done. And then all my graphics are done. My cards are all done. I don't know if you caught this, but the decks were originally going to be. It was originally going to be. Was it 48 cards per deck? And there's two decks for the full system. So if you bought, you could buy one deck or you could buy both the decks. As a reward to everybody, being that I did the 150%, I'm giving everybody the power cards. So there's six champions, six fates, and six arcane per deck. So you're getting an extra 18 cards per deck. And these are the cards that are a little more powerful. You can take them out. They're marked, so they're easy to pick out of the deck if you don't want to use them, because they can be a tiny bit unbalancing. Like, for example, one of them is called Wrath. And what that is when you play that, your opponent has to remove as many pawns as possible to equal out the numbers. He doesn't have to remove any of his big pieces, just pawns. So let's say he has three more pieces than you, and you play that, he has to remove three pawns if he has three or more pawns. So he could have to take off all his pawns. That's a pretty powerful card, right? But play it. I mean, if you're in the lead, that card will do nothing for you if you're behind. But imagine you're massively behind and you get that card. Like, it's just your king and a pawn and he's got a bunch of pieces. And like, bam! You can throw that down. He might have to pull every pawn off his board. So there's a bunch of cards like that. those are the power cards. I think they're really cool, and I wanted everybody to have them, so I put them in. And let's see, what else? So I had to do the big board. So check this out. I had to do a box cover for the big box for the Rook level. I had to do the 72, it's a 72 card deck, basically. That's the box you have to put it in. I had to do a box for that. Then I had to do the small pro box. And then I did a board, a quad fold board. So I had to do all those graphics too. And I was like, oh my God. I was like, man, it's never ending. I was like, this graphic, that graphic. And the boxes, they have a top and a bottom and the sides. So you have to do all the graphics for all of that. I finally got it all done. It's all done. I'm just waiting to hear back from my fulfillment service. The Game Crafter is actually my fulfillment service. So not only are they going to print them, sending them all the addresses, and they're going to send them all out for me. I'll never even see these.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. It's a pretty good deal. And they cut me a break. So they give me a discount on the printing, on the manufacturing costs. Now I have to pay, of course, I have to pay for all the delivery as well. But you know, you kind of get a break. So that's cool. And I was smart enough to I did my research, and I only have two foreign sales of a physical product, because everybody I talked to said that killed them. I think James Carpio said that he's taking a hit from his international sales, and my buddy Steve took a hit from his international sales. So I put on mine, if it was international, it was going to cost you like an extra $25 or $35. I'm like, you know, I'm sorry, but that's what it costs. I can't be stuck paying for your shipping. I mean, there's no point in doing a Kickstarter if that's the case. You know, if I wanted to fund this thing completely out of my own pocket, I would have just done that. But yeah, it worked out. So I'm really happy about that. And I'm just waiting on the bill from those guys right now. And then once I get the bill from them, I'll also get the delivery date. I'll get the estimated delivery date, and I can tell everybody, hey, your stuff is coming.
That sounds good. I know I've been looking forward to getting the finished product and rooking someone into playing with me and checking out the cards and everything, and it'll be good.
So, you know, when we talked, I don't think I had playtested it a whole lot. That was part of the Kickstarter, was to pay for playtest decks to encourage people to play it. The feedback I've gotten has been fantastic, and the feedback, the playtesting I did, it actually turned out to be better than I thought it was going to be. Like,
any apprehension I had went out the window. I was playing it, and I was like, oh my God, this is even better than I thought it was going to be. So I'm very, very, very happy with the product. I'm really happy with what I put together, and you know, I hope it goes and multiplies and is fruitful. And there are a lot of people who play Rogue Chess. It should be really cool.
Just from what I saw on the Kickstarter and what you had told me before, it sounded special then. It sounds even better now. And I'm sure once I actually get everything and start using it, I'll be raving about it to everyone and say, oh, you should have gone on the Kickstarter for this. But do you think you'll end up having like a storefront or something online where people will be able to buy it after the fact?
Oh,
or
yeah.
Do you think, like, this is it?
Nope. I'm gonna be selling this. As a matter of fact, I have I'm working on trying to get distribution. I have a contact at Alliance Distribution, but talking to Stephen Porcamo, and we can talk about his thing real quick if you want.
Yeah.
The I can't think of what's the name of it. It's
Dwarven
Forge. Yeah. All right. So Stephen, the guy who does Dwarven Forge, he told me that Alliance can be tricky to work with, and Tim Cass told me the same thing, and those are two guys that. You know, I mean, I trust Tim. If he tells me I should be wary of working with somebody, I'm going to take that to heart. Now, he might have had a bad experience. I don't know, but that makes me skeptical, so I'm not just going to jump in there and go, oh, yeah, Alliance, sure, whatever. Just give me the paperwork. I'll sign it. You know, I'm definitely, if I decide to go with him, if I go down that road, I am definitely going to probably put a couple bucks out and pay a lawyer to look over everything to make sure I'm not getting, you know, screwed over in any way. But I'm also thinking about talking to Tim and talking to Steve and say, hey, who distributes your guys' stuff? Because they have distributors, you know. It's like, can you give me a contact? Maybe this would be a product that they'd be interested in doing. And another thing that I'm planning on doing, once I get the distribution lined up, I have a guy who wants to translate it into Spanish for me. I have a friend who's German, speaks German and English fluently. I think I'm going to ask him if he wants to translate it for me. He's done translation work for other people. easy translation. I mean, it's, you know, the card only has a couple sentences on it. It's not like translating a whole book. It's pretty easy. And then I'd like to see how many languages I can get it in, because I feel like this is more of a European game than an American game. Europeans seem to be a little more into chess than Americans are. And I'll sell it to anybody. I mean, honestly, I'd love to get this thing in Chinese and Japanese and Russian and, I don't know, Swahili. Anyone who will play it, I'll translate it, you know, and hopefully get a lot of overseas exposure. I don't know if you can tell, I love the game. I think it's awesome. And I want to share it with everybody. I hope everybody enjoys it and, just, you know, loves it as much as I do. I think, Tim was looking at it. Tim says, yeah, I don't play chess. I don't, he's like, ever since, you know, so I used to play chess a long, long time ago, but since I found this certain game, he's like, I just kind of put it aside. I don't even own a chessboard anymore. And I was showing him the cards, and he says, you know, I might try this. He's like, as a matter of fact, talk about it. You gave me something that makes me want to try chess again. He's like, that's kind of hard to do. So that was a cool endorsement. I like that. So I'm thinking about, sending Tim a free set. Like when I order the sets, when they send the bill, I might say stick another one or a couple more on there, and I might send out a couple free ones to people. Because if Tim will talk about it and review it, man, that's worth its weight in gold. I'll give him 10 sets. so yeah, there's going to be a storefront. I don't have a date for that yet, but it'll be after everybody's orders have been fulfilled.
So if people want to keep up to date with like everything you do with the Mythwits and Rogue Chess and all that kind of stuff, where should they go? How can they keep following you and all that kind of stuff?
All right, the best way is studio187.com. That is the hub of everything. You can find everything I do there. That will take you to Mythwits. Now, there's mythwits.com, of course, and, you know, it's mythwits.com. And I also have roguechess.com, but that just takes you to studio187.com. But that's where you go. Go to studio187.com. We have a YouTube channel for Mythwits, and it's simple. It's YouTube/Mythwits. And there's Twitter, of course. I don't really do the Twitter. Matter of fact, all the stuff that goes on Twitter is basically, if I post it on the website or I do a Facebook post, it automatically does Twitter. And every once in a blue moon, I'll do a Twitter. And maybe I'm discouraging you guys from following me on Twitter, but, you know, if you want to, if you're a Twitter person, we do make Twitter posts. And I think the other guys, I think Mike's going to be a little more about it, and Adrian, he's definitely more about Twitter than I am. I have a hard time getting into it. I don't know why. I'm just, like, Twitter resistant. But, yeah, that's where you find all my stuff.
Well, there's so many social media outlets. It's hard to have a valuable presence on each of them. So, like, for example, there's a Twitter account for Wargaming Recon, and
right.
What it is all our content gets auto-reposted onto Twitter after X number of days, and it'll just randomly pick blog posts, and it'll say, hey, previously recorded on whatever, and it'll have a link to the show, where we really, all the time, and I say we, but it's mainly me who puts the time, it's on Facebook.
Right.
That's how we have the community involvement.
I guess I should mention that we have Studio 187 Facebook. I am very, very active on that, and the Mythwits Facebook pages. I'm very active on those. If you want to get the latest and greatest up-to-date instantaneous information from us, it'll be Facebook, because that's how we like to interact with our audience. You know, because it's two-way that way. It's really easy. Like on a website, it's kind of hard to get feedback from people. We do have that. Like if you leave comments, we get those. But it's just not as immediate and personal as Facebook, and I like that interaction. I like our fans to come on and you know, like posts and make comments and joke with us and pick on us, post pictures, whatever you want. I leave it open so people can leave comments and stuff like that. I'm all about it. I think that's what it's there for.
Well, I want to thank you very much for coming on this episode of Wargaming Recon. It's been a blast having you, and I really need to urge listeners to check out the Mythwits. We'll have links to that and everything in the show notes for this episode, which you can get to by going to wargamingforums.com/WR110, wargamingforums.com/110. So thank you again for coming on.
One second. So the next episode that we're going to do is going to be episode 11. We're going to have Gary Asselford on, and that's next Monday, so that's, I don't know, what date is that?
Well, everyone should be listening to
the 17th.
Yeah, St. Paddy's Day.
All right, so it'll be the same day. Of course, we have Encore. You can watch it. I will be wearing, because it's video, I'll be wearing my Wargaming Recon shirt on that episode.
Sweet. And then I know at some point down the road, I mean, who knows when, but once we work out our schedules, I'm going to be coming on at some point to talk about Wargaming and stuff.
Absolutely,
I will promote that as much as possible. I'm a media whore, I guess is the word, really. as shameless self-promoter. There we go.
You know what I might do is I might, if you're up for it, I might have you come on and school us on the history of wargaming, because I don't think a lot of people know how far back it goes and like, you know, what was wargaming like in the 40s and the 50s, because it did exist.
So
that would be really cool for our audience. I think they would like that.
As a teaser, and I'm sure a lot of listeners for Wargaming Recon already know, but it goes back to the 1800s, earlier even, 1700s. So there's all sorts of interesting stuff there. People might be surprised where it kind of meanders into.
Because we'll pick your brain, because if you're the Wargaming Recon, you're the expert. We're going to pick your brain. Sound good?
Well, I don't know about expert, but I'm happy to talk.
Okay. You're the greatest expert we know. All right. Well, thanks a lot. It's been awesome. Thank you for having me on your show.
As always, it's been a pleasure. So thank you again, Peter, for coming on the show. And I want to remind everyone, check out our show notes. So you guys know the drill. You know what's going to happen. We'll be back next time with another episode of Wargaming Recon. And until then, you need to keep on gaming. So that was guest Peter Blix Bryant talking with us about his new video podcast, The Mythwits. Before we get this episode to its conclusion, episode 110, I just want to get us to our mailbag and a couple of brief announcements. So we've been getting in the habit of doing a mailbag section at the end of the show. Whenever we get any sort of feedback or comments from any of you, whether it's as an email or a comment on the blog, on Facebook or wherever that you happen to send us your comments and your feedback, try to take that and pick through those, and some of them will end up on the air. Of course, we only have so much time every episode to get stuff out, so we may not get everyone's comments and feedback onto an episode, and we may have to edit those just for, you know, time constraints. We're not editing for substance. If you say something and you're like, oh, here's some constructive criticism, totally taking that to heart and trying to improve and share that with everyone, but whether it's good or whatever types of feedback, we might just have to, you know, edit things a little bit to fit into our time constraints. So the first bit of mail is actually a comment that was on our Facebook page. In episode 109, we covered Total Con, and during our coverage, I happened to discuss a game I played. It was Mechton Zero. It used the Gundam tactical miniatures that Jay Libby, who was an industry guest for TotalCon and GM for that game, and of course his name's familiar because he's appeared here as a guest on Wargaming Recon a couple times. So he left the comment just kind of addressing a question that I had raised in episode 109 about the way damage was done and the use of different sided dice. So Jay Libby said on Facebook, to answer your question about dice and damage, I used scrap paper at SnowCon, but everyone switched to dice, so I just ran it that way at TotalCon. Well, thank you, Jay, for your comment and for clarifying that for me, because, like I said, I was a little confused by it, and of course, using dice is a way that many people track damage in all sorts of games, whether it's a role-playing game or a minis game. I have definitely gone ahead and used dice when I'm gaming with the guys at Wargaming Recon Central, and we'll have a D6 or something to say, oh, look, there's 2 points of damage or whatever. And just happened to be at the con. It was a little difficult for me, and good to know that if you don't have all those different sided dice handy, you can definitely just use pad or paper and a pen or a pencil to keep track of that. Then we had one other comment also on Facebook from listener Andrew. Andrew actually posted this on his own Facebook, but tagged Wargaming Recon, so it showed up in our feed. So I want to thank you, Andrew, first of all, for tagging us that way so that I could see your comment. But Andrew had said, quote, thanks to all of Jonathan's photographs of his beautifully painted Flames of War army, I now find myself organizing a small Flames of War event in South Wales. I'm going to spend the next 6 months buying models, painting figures, building Dutch terrain, recruiting new players, and teaching the rules. Screams of frustration known only to wargamers. He says, our plan is to pit the experienced adult players against the kids to ensure someone knows the rules on each table. He goes on to say, the games against the kids will be friendly and relaxed, and once they go home, the adults will get competitive. The event is basically a reunion for a bunch of old friends from university. We all played Flames of War together and have formed our own clubs after graduating back home. So teams from England and North Wales will take on the pride of South Wales. We're using the new Market Garden and Bridge by Bridge books to give the games a common theme. Ironically, the Allied players currently outnumber the Axis ones, but the Axis players have 1,500 point armies available to them. And to encourage the youngsters to learn the rules, to paint their models, and not to cheat, he says, I will arrange a best sportsman trophy and prize. So, Andrew, I want to say thank you, of course, for your feedback and your comments and for checking out our show and following us on Facebook and liking us on Facebook. He's referring to, at the start of his comments, on every day on Facebook, just about, we have a new post that goes up on Facebook, a new blurb, and usually has a picture. We try to actually always put a photo with it of something, whether we found it online or a game that we played in or anything. So for quite a while, I had been wanting to post photos of my Flames of War army, and I had taken photos ages and ages ago, and then they disappeared. So I retook the photos, and I was like, okay, I'm finally going to put them online, and I put them up, and I scheduled it so that I would have one, I think one a day is what I did, and had those go onto the Facebook page where we're giving recon. So over the course of 2 weeks, you got these photos of my Panzer Grenadier army. Well, it's actually a Panzer army with Panzer Grenadiers. Anyway, that doesn't matter. So those photos, and it's proof that I have at one point in my life painted something and have a mostly painted army. There are some components I don't quite have yet for that army. I've never played it. Can't say that I have any definitive intention to just get out there and start playing Flames of War, but should I get the inkling to give that game a new go, I have some stuff to use. So that's what he's referring to, and Andrew, I want to say that I stand firmly behind you and know that you are going to do a smash-up job with your reunion slash Flames of War tourney event. So I know that it's going to be a lot of fun for you and everyone who's participating. This is just yet another example of ways to grow the hobby and reach out to people all over the place. So if you have a game that you love, maybe it's been a while that you haven't played it in, why not dust it off and maybe organize an event like Andrew's doing with Flames of War in South Wales and see if you can get some other people together and maybe use it as a way to bridge the age gap to younger gamers or younger would-be gamers to get them into wargaming. Just some food for thought. So that ends our mailbag segment, and I want to remind everyone that we have some new stuff to 2014. First off, and I've been mentioning this a fair bit lately, is that we now have our episode guide. It's available at wargamingforums.com/episode guide. And the cool thing about the episode guide or episode plan is that it lists upcoming episodes, tells you when they will be released, and tells you the episode number. And as I get my act together and coordinate with whatever guests or just kind of get some pre-planning done on my end, I'm able to put in what the general theme will be or the title of the episode, who the guests might be, all that kind of stuff. So by the time that you're listening to this, you will have been able to go onto the episode guide and see that in addition to all the episodes that have been released for 2014 by this point, that I have some planned coming up. So on March 30th, episode 111 comes out. That will be an episode where I speak with guest Dean Emerson. He is a member of MHWA and an organizer for HuzzahCon. So we're going to talk about HuzzahCon 2014. Then on April 14th, episode 112 comes out. And that actually is a direct result of some listener feedback. Listener Andrew, ages ago, had commented on Facebook to me that he was interested in how I became a wargamer. I feel like I kind of bridge and go back and forth between old school and new school. I'm young enough that I should be doing new school, but I'm kind of interested in old school. And maybe my gaming is different enough that will interest people. So episode 112 is how Jonathan became a wargamer. And then on April 28th, we have episode 113, where I kind of do an editorial reply inspired by an article, a column really, that was in an episode of Wargames, Soldiers, and Strategy magazine, in which I address the question of, are painted miniatures essential to miniatures wargaming? So that might be an episode that you will find interesting. And of course, when I actually release that episode, you'll be able to hear it and get some thoughts from me about the topic. And of course, I will mention the column that kind of spurred me on to think about it and want to address it on the show. And then this is brand new on May 12th, or at least I'm planning for May 12th. The date might change a little bit. Is episode 114, and I'm going to do a Wargamer's Survival Guide to Kickstarter. There's been a lot of talk within the past year or so about companies doing Kickstarter projects to get games and wargames out. There's been some bad, there's been some good. So I'm not really going, or at least I'm not intending to explain how Kickstarter works. I want to address some things that you and I as potential backers of a Kickstarter project should look for before backing it. I've backed a few, and I'm going to recommend some others for people to listen to and think about. And of course, in this episode, we had Peter Bryan on, and he talked about his previous and first Kickstarter project, Rogue Chess. And I recommended that, but not every Kickstarter is for everyone. So there's just some tips that I'm going to share and things to look for. It's a must listen to episode for everyone. So you can always check out our episode guide to see what's coming up and who some future guests might be. Then don't forget, if you listen to the show, if you love Wargaming Recon, you could help us grow the hobby by subscribing on iTunes if you don't already, and then rating us on iTunes. Oddly enough, we don't have any ratings, and iTunes is the most popular way for people to find podcasts. So if you really enjoyed the show, or if you think we have room for improvement or whatever, just give us an honest rating on there. It's a star system, 1 to 4 or 1 to 5 stars. And if you think we're 4 stars or 5 stars, woo, wonderful. But if you think we're 2 or 3, that's fine as well. Just give us a rating so that way we show up, because a show with ratings in the iTunes directory is better than a show with no ratings. And then lastly, speaking of Kickstarter, I just want to give everyone a heads up about a Kickstarter that I think is just actually pretty darn amazing. So this is a Kickstarter that Henry Hyde, formerly of Battle Games Magazine and now editor of Miniatures War Games, now with Battle Games Magazine, had turned me onto on Facebook. It's a Kickstarter for some music, I guess you could say, but ambient sound for when you're gaming. It's called Ambient Soundscapes Volume 2 for Tabletop Gaming. And this project is looking to raise $5,000 as of the recording of this episode. It has raised over $3,500. It has 14 days to go. So by the time all of you listen to it, it'll have a little bit more than 8 or 9 days left. I want to suggest that you check it out and listen to it. We will have a link in the show notes. And the person who created the project, I contacted him. His name is Scott. I asked Scott if he had any sort of audio that I could share with people. So as we close out, you'll be able to hear his audio montage from his first Kickstarter, Volume 1. It was great. It made me definitely want to subscribe and back the Kickstarter project. So I can tell you that I am definitely a backer. I'm a backer at a level so that I can get the great MP3 files for this. And I'm looking forward to using them in my gaming. So I'm going to close things out. And then you will be able to listen to the complete audio montage that's on the Kickstarter project for Volume 2, Audio Soundscapes Volume 2 for Tabletop Gaming. So I hope you like it, and if you do, please check out the Kickstarter for it. And like I said, there'll be a link in the show notes, and you, as always, can get the show notes by heading on over to wargamingforums.com/WR110, wargamingforums.com/WR110, and that'll have everything we've covered in this episode and links and all that kind of stuff. Of course, links to Studio 187 and the Kickstarter project for Ambient Soundscapes Volume 2 for Tabletop Gaming. So thank you all yet again for listening to another episode of Wargaming Recon. You know the drill. You know how it goes. You have to. You need to. You gotta keep on gaming. Crossroad Games in Standish, Maine is holding a 32-hour-long charity board game marathon on Saturday, April 5th, 2014, lasting into Sunday, April 6th, 2014. All money raised will benefit childsplaycharity.org. Each participant needs to raise at least $100 to participate. This is supposed to be collected from friends and coworkers. Childsplaycharity.org, quote,
seeks to improve the lives of children in hospitals around the world through the kindness and generosity of the video game industry and the power of play. All of the money is going to childsplaycharity.org. Players will get t-shirts and swag for participating, as well as playing a ton of board games. Crossroad Games is putting together the demo list, and they are considering having a game design seminar at the marathon. If you can't participate, please spread the word about this important charity. Hospitals around the world benefit from funds raised through childsplaycharity.org. Email info@crossroadgames.com for further information. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
If you heard it and you do like it, good. If you don't like it, what I'm supposed to do.